And I'm just thrilled to be here tonight with the Bismarck crew and all the newcomers. Congratulations, those who took tokens. Dale, 40 years, that's fantastic. Thank you for keeping coming back to tell us that this is how we get to stay sober, if we stay right here in the middle of it. And thank you so much, Shayna, for a wonderful talk. It's like we could all go home now. And thank you, Christy, for inviting me to share with you tonight. Wow. And welcome those who are virtually with us as well. So we have lots of newcomers tonight. So I think I will take a little bit more time on what is the problem of alcoholism. And please no booze. The rest of the evening. That was kind of lame. He's my baby. And so just for the statistic, I have a home group, Back Porch International, and actually we just spend the weekend together hanging out. I love to hang out with alcoholics. I love to be one-on-one with my sponsees. I love to be talking to my sponsor. I just love being with alcoholics. It's my life today. It really is. I feel happy, joyous, and free. I am excited with my life. And if you ask me, oh, but what do you do? I said, well, I meet with my sponsees, and then I go to meetings, and I love when my sponsees call me, they all have their Netflix series, and I love to hear the new episode. And then it's always so tragic. Oh, that's the, he did what? Oh, honey, yes, I'd feel that way too. Now let's talk about it. How did you send that ball rolling? What was your motivation? Wasn't there any selfishness in this? Let's try to find out what it is about your inventory that brought that about. I just love doing it. I call it the spiritual diagnosis. What is the problem? So we can find a solution based on the steps, on the traditions, or on the concepts. We have so many, many principles that can help us live a life that allows us to be happy, joyous, and free. And I have a sponsor, Cheryl. She's the most amazing sponsor in the whole wide world. I love my sponsor. And I still call her about once a week. If I'm anxious about something, if I'm in doubt, if I'm not sure, I want to avoid making mistakes today. I really do. And so if I get a text that kind of disturbs me a little bit, or just don't know, I copy it, I forward it to her. How do I respond to this? And so if you are new, please, there is no reason to wait to find a sponsor. And I can feel this is a solution, tradition-based meeting. And there are people who raise their hand already. And what a sponsor is, really, is a confidant, is someone who's going to hold your hand, someone toward whom you are accountable. If you're missing meetings, he, she will know. If you're not working your steps, she, he will know. And hopefully you can start reading the big book with them line by line so you can have your questions answered about what it is that we do. And at that home group, we meet every day. I attend 2-3 times a week, and I have 2 weekly commitments with my home group. And I've been sober since June 22nd, 1982. So I am proof that with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, one can be sober at least 41 years. In the second foreword in the big book, it talks about permanent sobriety, and we hardly ever hear that at meetings, but the word is there. Dr. Bob, Bill Dodson, the man on the bed, and Bill Wilson, all three of them achieved permanent sobriety. So if today you would rather not drink again, we have a solution for you. We can show you how to do that. And it's hard, it's simple, but look at these steps. This is like not for the faint of heart if you really look at what we're supposed to do. And it says also, rarely have we seen a person fail. It was read tonight, who has thoroughly followed the path. So the odds that all of us here today, whether with 29 days or 41 years, that we stay sober forever, the odds are really, really high. Rarely have we seen a person fail. To those who have thoroughly means exact, precise, following to the end, thoroughly followed our path. And this is the path right there, 12 steps, that's where it is. And so it also says that all we have is a daily reprieve. That's it. So it's not that I'm a turnip that just fell off the truck. The reason why I still do this every day, it's because I have a daily reprieve. So last night at midnight, I turned into a pumpkin again. And this morning, I have to set myself straight with my higher power, with the steps, looking at my day and getting ready for my day. And at midnight tonight, a pumpkin again. All I get is one 24 hour a day after another. And the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, it is so, so amazing. And you're getting a taste of it tonight. I've attended 4,000 to 5,000 AA meetings in my life. I need them. I love them. But if you look at the steps, where is it written that we go to meetings? In the big book, it says we meet frequently so the newcomers have a place to bring their problems. This isn't for me or for Dale. It's for the newcomer. So look at the 12th step. We try to carry this message to alcoholics. So at meetings, I found sponsor, sponsees, opportunity to carry the message. It's about 5% of the program. I can make 15 meetings a week. It's fantastic. But it's a fantastic 5%. And this is the mistake that so many, many members make. They go to lots of meetings, but they ignore the rest of the steps. And this, except for the fifth step, where we talk to another human being, and the 10th step, when we need to discuss something, all the other steps are done alone, at home, right here. The bulk of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous happens alone at home. So I can't forget this 95% of the program. And so why am I doing this 41 years sober? What does that mean to me today to be an alcoholic? The same thing than the one who was sober 29 days. There is no evidence in science or in medicine or with your own experiences that somehow in the last 41 years, the strange phenomenon of craving has fixed itself in my body. No evidence anywhere. I believe absolutely that should I pick up a drink tomorrow, I would have 12 or 15 drinks because that's the way I drink. I drank for the first time when I was 13, and I've always been very insecure, full of fear. I don't like people. I'm uncomfortable in my skin. I have this corroding thread of fear going through my soul, always, all the time. I don't play with the little girl. I'm in the corner looking down at my shoes, watching the others play because I know they won't like me. I'm awkward socially. And I buy a pack of six beers. I go to a party. Before I'm halfway through the first beer, all that went away, completely went away. I was comfortable in my gut where I live. And I was jolly with the cool girls of the class. We're outside, we have our arms around each other. I mean, this was like heavenly. And I continued to drink my beers and I blacked out. I don't remember, except I went to get my last beer and they told me Susan drank my beer. I found Susan and I slapped her in the face. This is at the gate, first time out. This is not social drinking. And my double life began for me that day, because when I came home, I never told my mom. First of all, Mom, that beer made me feel just wonderful. And it's weird. I don't remember most of the evening. And you know, Mom, I slapped a girl in the face, Mom. And I can't wait to drink again. This was a secret that I kept until I came to you many years later. That's how I drink. I drank for 14 years the same way. I'm not interested in having two drinks. I'm not. I want to alter the way that I feel. I want to numb those insecurities and those fear of people and being rejected and failing the exam. I want to numb that. That's why I drink. I wanted to have a few. But some of you I know wanted to stop drinking along the way. Not me. I never wanted to stop drinking. I just wanted to be able to control it. And I failed every single time. So what happened to me over the period of 14 years, I was in Quebec, Canada. I thought if only I had a great education, maybe I would feel the way you look to me like you feel. And when I was 24 years old, I had a license to practice law. And I'm not saying that to put myself above anybody. That's just to tell you that that made no difference. Absolutely none. I kept drinking more often, harder, sooner in the day to obliterate the way that I feel. And so education didn't work. Boyfriends didn't work. In law school, I was living with one and I had three backups. I had four boyfriends. I was so busy drinking, and we all lived in the same apartment building. Well, that's really practical. It saves the driving time, but it's always anxious to try to go out the front door because you don't know who's going to be there. I mean, I live my life based on my feelings. Absolutely on my feelings. I had no consideration for anybody. In the big book, it's telling us that selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our problem. For a while, I was complaining, well, for many, many years, that my promiscuity was caused by my dad, because my dad had a little problem with anger and we could not say no to him. So for 40 some odd years, I said, this is because of my dad. He taught me to say yes. And one time after a meeting, I'm talking to some people and this came up. And this guy said, I'm a psychologist and I've never read that anywhere. That makes a lot of sense. And so my sponsor came to visit me last year. And she's been sponsoring me for about 4 years, and she doesn't know my sex inventory. So I just happened to share that with her about my dad. She said, your dad? She said, Lynn, when it feels good, you do it. There it goes. And so I have to be able to share honestly, rigorous honesty, because I won't see it. The big book is clear that the crux of the problem centers in our mind. And that's the other part of alcoholism that's still true for me today. There is no evidence anywhere that should I leave you, should I stop working all the 12 steps, should I leave the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, that within a couple of years, I would not be at risk being at a little party somewhere and someone would offer me a drink and I wouldn't take it. There is no evidence of that either after 41 years. I will die, my friends, with the risk of drinking again, always. However, if I follow that path thoroughly, the odds is I'm going to continue the rest of my life sober. I just have to be very careful. In the big book, I found 23 relapse warnings. You do this, you drink again. You don't do that, you will drink, and to drink is to die. They all laid out why we drink again. And it's interesting because in the big book, we have Jeff, we have Jim, Fred, and Bill. And all three of them drank again when things were looking good again. Out of the hospital, feeling good, they're going to a business meeting. This is concluding to their advantage. And you know what? A little milk with the whiskey with a sandwich. The insanity. Or a cocktail before dinner. Or Bill Wilson, the same thing. The insanity to think I can drink again. And the problem is, if the obsession to drink was always raging, let's say I'm out there for 2 years by myself, and all of a sudden, gosh, a drink sounds really good. Oh my goodness, I really need to have a drink. Oh, I've been thinking about that for 3 hours now. Oh my goodness, what if I get drunk? I better pick up my big book. I better call somebody. I better go to a meeting, do something. But what you're telling me is that there is just a little voice there. Sure, you could have a drink. It's just so elusive, cunning, powerful, baffling. There is no premeditation. There is no warning. Lynn, it's today that you will want to drink. Be careful. No, there is that strange mental blank space. And for 5 minutes, my friends, I will have no recollection whatsoever that I'm an alcoholic, that I've been to 5,000 AA meetings, that I've studied that big book word for word. I know what's in it. I know what's not there. It's a curse for my sponsees. But my license plate is BBTHMPR, as in big book thumper and proud of it. Well, you send me out there on my own for a couple of years, and I will not have access to the information. It's in the big book. Self-knowledge avails us nothing. Fear sobered up Bill a bit. But our Mrs. Day, he drank again. A great desire, a great need, necessity, nope, drank again. To fail to enlarge our spiritual life in working with others. Not prayer, meditation in working with others. And we will not be able to face the trials ahead. So all of us can expect trials ahead. So if I wait for the trial to be upon me to work with someone, I might be too late. So it tells me that there is a certain sense of prevention in our program. In the morning, prayer, meditation, during the day, looking at that mind. What is this telling me? You know, a shiny object. Those shiny objects all is well in the world. And all of a sudden, she shouldn't have said that to me. You know, they should have invited me, really. You see, it's that thought, just a thought. And if I'm not aware, I'm going to feed this. And you know what? I know they told me before, nobody likes her anyway. She's just a jerk. I can't believe she would. Let me call so-and-so and ask why she thinks I wasn't invited. Then I starting the gossip. And if it's done texting, oh my goodness. If I get a text from Shayna and she didn't put the little smiley face, is she mad at me? I mean, this is all, it's the mind. The problem centers in my mind. And all those steps here are designed to help me treat that mind by seeking a higher power. But I had no relationship, nothing to do with religion. I was raised in a religion, nothing to do whatsoever. And so I'm on my own all those years when I was drinking. And what happened is my reputation as I'm a woman, bar drinker, the joy and the thrill of being a fallen woman. And so I fled to San Diego and I took my reputation with me. And I had this boyfriend, and you know, I'm a bar drinker. And it doesn't matter. I'm going to go back to that bar tonight. And I knew he would throw me out. He told me. And we were living in the big house, and there was the fancy sports car in the driveway, and the motorhome, and the fast boat, and very nice lifestyle and everything. And I was an illegal immigrant. I was emotionally unemployable. I had no money. He was supporting me financially 100%. I was estranged from my family. And the only people who tolerated me were his friends. You would think that's enough. In the morning, when I wake up and I'm shaking and I'm sick, and you know, today I'm going to have just two drinks today. I cannot go back to the bar. He's going to kick me out. I had certainly the necessity, the desire, but you know, I drink against my own will. Because I can't wait to have my two drinks at 4 o'clock. That's it. Now it's 8:15. And yeah, 4 o'clock. I'm going to have my drink. Just two, no more. Now it's 9 o'clock. I am totally obsessed with drinking. And now my situation is precarious. Because I need to get a job. I need to do something. I'm just home all day and we have parties at the house. I have no self-respect, no self-esteem, no rudder, no principles to live by. Just, oh my gosh, I need to quiet this because I'm so afraid. And I'm alone here except from this guy and his friends. And you know, at 11 o'clock, then you could have one. And then you can have the second one at 4. Now, I failed hundreds of times to do that. But this is the insanity of alcoholism. You see, this is what we're fighting here. You mentioned it, life or death. This is against my will. And of course, the thought of having the drink at 11 o'clock and I'm salivating because I'm going to get some relief from that pitiful psychic torture. Oh my gosh, look at my life. And so of course, by the time he comes home, I'm drunk. I pick up a fight so I can go back to the bar. And I show up again at 3 a.m. and the bar closed at 1 o'clock. And so he did kick me out. And I rented a room in a sleazy two-bedroom apartment. And I was sleeping in a sleeping bag on the floor. My clothes were on the floor and I lived like an animal. This is eventually what happens to us if we just drink long enough. This is what's gonna happen. And for 3-4 months, I lived on that floor like this, going to dingy bars still. And what happened the last weekend of my drinking is nothing particular, except it didn't work. No matter how much I drank that weekend, I was sober from the neck up. I failed to black out. I failed to achieve some kind of relief from those horrible feelings and that fear of living. And so Monday morning, I had a bit of vodka, a bit of beer. I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the man said, "You want to stop drinking?" And I said, "No, no, no. I just want to learn how to have five or six. It's after that I get in all this trouble." He said, "You're not ready for us. When you want to stop drinking, call us back." And for the next couple of hours or so, what I heard loud and clear was, "Lynn, you're done with drinking. There is nothing left in this for you." I did not call out for help. I did not ask a higher power for anything. This is just what I heard. And I called back and he said, "Great, a lady in your area will call you." So Beverly calls me. We talked a bit and she said, "Would you like to go somewhere?" I'm thinking, yeah, I'm a traveler. I love going places. I assumed they would take me to the La Costa Resort. I could use the mud bath, the massages, and I would send the bill to my ex who was wealthy, no problem. So I eagerly accepted the proposition. She said, "Great, my husband and I will pick you up in 20 minutes, pack a few clothes," which is all I had. And they took me to detox downtown with the winos. So I was disappointed, but I stayed. I stayed and they gave me the 20 questions. And I thought, well, I went to school. You know, I've taken tests that were very difficult. This is going to be easy. And indeed, I got 17 right the first time I took it. He said, "You're an alcoholic." I said, "I know." He said, "No kidding. You really are an alcoholic." I said, "I know." And he said, "What's so happy or funny about this?" And I said, "I had thought myself a lot worse things than being an alcoholic. I thought I was crazy one time in the corner of the room, in the living room, screaming from the top of my head enough for neighbors two houses down to overhear me calling the police, thinking I was being beaten. I have never been beaten in my life. I've never broken a bone. This was just my soul crying out for help. I am crazy." And with the promiscuity, I had called myself a lot worse thing. And this man was telling me, "No, no, Lynn, this is what the problem is. There are plenty of people who have lived the way you have, in fear, drinking the way you did, in shame, in remorse, in regrets. And now they have found a way to be happy and sober. I have never, ever put those two words together, happy and sober. I am not happy sober because of how I feel, because of all the fears." And he's telling me, "We have a way for you to go. And it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous." And my friends, I began to say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous that day. And when Christy called me, I said yes. I still say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous today. And that is the key. That is the turning over. That is the willingness. They told me to stay for 3 days. I did. They suggested I went to the 7-day program next door. I said yes. They recommended I went to a recovery house for alcoholic women. I was on my way out. The rent was 3 weeks past due. I had no money on that floor. I needed a place to stay. I said yes. When I got there, they said, "You will make your bed every morning. You will show up for prayer meditation at 8:15 every morning." I said yes. "We want you to make a meeting a day. Here's the sheet." I said, yes. They gave me a big book and they told me to highlight what I related in Bill Wilson's story. I said, yes. They told me to get a sponsor. I said, yes. And I still say yes, solidly anchored within the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And inside of me with this higher power, now I'm all happy I found you, right? The fellowship people. I mean, I love Alcoholics Anonymous from the very first day, even in detox with the winos. I feel at home with you. This is the only place in the world where I so feel at home. And it's with my brothers and sisters in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I hear the word God. Oh, gosh, no, the God thing. I'll avoid it. I'll avoid it. Like we avoid orange cones on a parking lot, you know, avoid. But it's, look at this, it's all over the place. In fact, in the big book, it says we have 44 personal stories at the end. So people can tell us how they develop their relationship with their creator. This is all that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. All this is designed so when I see a shiny object, I quickly tack back, return into the moment so I can be of maximum service to you, so I can be in contact with my higher power again. And so what am I going to do with this? The big book talks about prejudices. I had big ones. And you know, I started listening to you, and it was peculiar because many of you belonged or had belonged to the same religion as when I grew up. And I grew up with a punishing one. Ooh! And some of you belonged to the same religion, but had a loving higher power. I thought, wait a minute, how could this be? Well, it depends on the human beings doing the teaching back then or today. So I gave myself permission to use my critical thinking about this higher power bit. And then there was one of you, a young lady, who said to her, God was like George Burns in the movie, Oh God. If you haven't seen it, it's like 40 years old. I went and watched it again. And this is George Burns with a hat, suspenders, sneakers, and he's talking to John Denver, not godly at all. And John said, but how can you dress this way? How can you wear hats like that? How can you talk like this? And George Burns, as God, said, I can wear anything I want, talk any way I want, depending on who I'm talking to, so they can understand me. And this just blew the roof for me. Alrighty, I read so many spiritual books, and also, and I've listened to you, and eventually from punishing to loving to out there to within me, within you. And Bill talks about the stream of life, right? And I always imagine the stream of life to be out there, and I can add to the stream of life. Well, in Bill's library, they found a book written by the philosopher Tagore, an Indian. And there is a poem written by him that's called The Stream of Life. I will not read it to you tonight, but what he says is, the stream of life running through my veins, and through yours, and through nature, and the flowers, and the trees, and back. And again, that just blew me away. That's how that looks like, feels like to me today. It's this incredible, loving, generous, intelligent energy. In the morning, we ask God to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. So for 30 years, I read this like patience and tolerance is somewhere on a shelf. I pray for it, and then I get a bundle there. No, I am full of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love, comfort, understanding, forgiveness, full of it until I'm mad at you. See, I'm very, very nice until I'm not. I'm very considerate and thoughtful when I want a shiny object. Then I go back to my guardsman and I have to have it. And there it is. And to the degree that I'm conscious and aware in the moment, I can bring myself back, zip it, and maybe, you know what, honey? How would you feel if we had? And if he says, no, I don't think so, I said, okay, good enough. Instead of me drumming it up, reminding him, after all I've done for you, I think it's about time I get one of those things. None of that has to happen. The stream of life running through me. And I am absolutely convinced that God's will for me is also very good for you. It is that intelligent, that all-inclusive, and that loving. My God is very, very generous. And I feel so connected. So I love to have a big, big, big higher power. So if you are new, and you have prejudices depending on how you were raised, or Bill has some example in the big book why people may be mad at God. Well, I can tell you that mine does not cure and doesn't kill. God is all of us here today loving each other when one of us is going through something different. This higher power needs us. He depends upon us so we can love each other. That higher power cannot love unless we show up lovingly to help each other. I mean, it is just so sweet, so reassuring, so comforting in that great, great big book that those of you who are brand, brand new are going to start studying like tomorrow. It says, God provides for all our needs. It's not my husband or my sponsor. It's God who provides for all my needs in here, intelligently directing me and providing. So I can be independent from other human beings. You can say no to me most of the time because you are not my provider. You are not my source. It's this higher power inside of me. If, and this is a big if, I stay close to that power. And how do I do that? 12 steps every single day. And to perform his work. How? Well, just well. The bar is very, very low in order for our performance to ensure that this higher power is going to take care of all my needs. Stay close, which means close to the principles, and then perform the work well. So tonight, all Shana and I and the secretary and the literature person and the treasurer and the chip person have to do it. It's just well. That's it. For all our needs to be taken care of. This has got to be the best deal in town. And I will leave you with this. If you are new, stay. If you go out, you come back, we're going to love you to pieces anyway. But what a price to pay. And there is never, ever any guarantee that that door is going to revolve one more time. Here we are safe. We are protected, we live in love, we live with a beautiful life of being of service to others. And so I hope that tonight I did my very best. I sat there, did a little bitty meditation, and Lynn, give it whatever you've got. in order to convince them to come one more day, not just to the meeting, but to crack open that big book with the hand of a sponsor. Thank you for my life.
Thank you.